up.
This is SB Nation AM.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios. O'Reilly Auto Parts. Better parts, better prices every day. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Glad you could join us, SB Nation AM, this morning. As we've been processing the hiring of coaches around the National Football League, some have gone bold, like Cliff Kingsbury, just recently fired as head coach at Texas Tech, and now is the head coach of the Arizona Cardinals. If you're a Cardinals fan, there's some excitement there. This is an unknown entity. I don't know what I'm getting. I could get a Sean McVay. I could get a guy that could be out of coaching for a little bit. But if you're the Jets and Adam Gase is your head coach, how does that make you feel knowing that while he is considered a quarterback whisperer, the success in Miami just isn't there and you're wanting to take that next step? You've got your quarterback in Sam Darnold and you want to take that next step. It's possible to get Le'Veon Bell in this offseason, but you want to make sure that the guy you get is going to be the right guy at the helm. Jets fans don't seem to be all enthusiastic about Adam Gase, but in Cleveland, I love to find the pulse of where Cleveland is right now with Freddie Kitchens. Because look, you keep it in-house. You don't go outside. You had too good of a season to sort of let anybody come in and tarnish it. You want to make sure Baker Mayfield is going in the right direction. Do you stay with your offensive coordinator and make him the head coach? Well, it seems like the smart thing to do. And if you're the Denver Broncos and you don't want to play with the big, bold choice, go after somebody completely off the board, if you're John Elway, take the guy that's been interviewing for positions for a long period of time, been waiting to get the head coaching job, and now has it in Vic Fangio. That is where the Denver Broncos are. Look, I've been critical of John Elway for a while because of the decisions that he's made at the quarterback position post-Manning. And the reality of it is, his influence on Peyton Manning getting him to come to Denver should not be overlooked, but he has not had success at the quarterback position except for Peyton Manning, and anybody would have gotten success from Peyton Manning. So Elway has failed in his pursuit of the next quarterback to take this team, but making that move to a strong defensive unit coming off that Super Bowl against Seattle was something that led them to a championship. And you can't take away the championship from a one-time executive of the year, even though he's swinging and missing on draft picks and quarterbacks and more or less coaches since he brought in Vance Joseph. But the one thing that he's got, the one key that he's got, is a guy that's been with him for a long period of time in Gary Kubiak. And that is going to be the key to where the Broncos are going to succeed.
Listening to SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
This is the Go-Go's?
Yes.
Is that right? All right? I don't know the name of the song. Our Lips Are Sealed. It's the only reason, because that's the hook for the song.
All that's right. Why I was quiet.
Is that Belinda Carlisle?
That's a bunch of people, actually.
Yeah, but she the lead singer, Belinda Carlisle?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. God, this makes me want to go to the mall and just hang out at an Orange Julius.
So it was Belinda Carlisle, Jane Weidland?
Jane Weidland, yeah.
Weidland, Charlotte Caffey, Gina Schock.
Okay.
And Kathy Valentine.
Oh, okay. What was the band Susanna Hoffs was in? Was that the Bengals?
I think so.
That was, yeah, okay.
The other girls band.
girls group. Welterweight superstars return to the ring when legendary eight-time champion Manny Pacquiao meets four-time champion Adrian the Problem Broner, two of the biggest stars in boxing, and one explosive fight. Pacquiao versus Broner Saturday, January 19th at 8 Eastern, 6 Pacific, live on pay-per-view. All right, so we continue to look at the National Football League. and the coaching searches that have been going on, and we get ready for the postseason. So we're going to talk to Brandon Belt of the Cowboys coming up, and Dallas,
Bobby Belt.
Remember, Bobby Belt. I'm sorry, why did I say Brandon? Bobby Belt. He does a Cowboys podcast, covers the Cowboys. They went 3-5 and looked like Cowboys are a mess again. And then all of a sudden they started to turn things around. They had Philadelphia Eagles then ran off 5 wins in a row. They got shut out by the Colts, but then won 2 straight to close out the season. So they closed out the year really strong and are going to Los Angeles to take on the Rams. It'll have a classic look, the Dallas Cowboys classic uniform against the Rams from yesteryear. We're talking about, you know, throwback. This game will have that classic NFC CBS old style look to it. But nevertheless, I think the Cowboys have a pretty good chance in this game. I don't want to dismiss the Rams by any means because their struggles may have been overly exaggerated in the 2 losses that they had in back-to-back games against the Bears and the Eagles. But nevertheless, I think the Cowboys, their ability to run the ball, and Dak Prescott with Amari Cooper, this has been a great trade for them. I mean, did we like this trade at the time? Because I thought we did.
I thought we blasted it.
There was one we didn't. I think this is the one we thought was bad, right?
No, it was. See, it was bad for the Cowboys, but good for the Raiders, because then the Cowboys give up like 3 number one picks.
They gave up a lot for it, and we thought the value was a little too much.
Yeah.
If I were mistaken, I thought we said, no, this is a little too expensive for Amari Cooper.
Yeah.
And it's worked out great.
It has. It's been the one trade that's kind of slapped everyone in the face that maybe, you know, both teams seem to be benefiting at this point.
I want to know, do we still look at Jerry Jones as a, I don't want to say that embarrassment's too strong a word, but a front office guy who is disastrous. I mean, remember when he used to make bad decisions? Like, he brought in Greg Hardy, and you remember he was making these bad trades?
I mean, kind of like an Al Davis.
Remember that? Remember there was like a period of time where you would be... Because I remember saying my line on Jerry Jones had always been, I like him as an owner. I don't like him as a front office exec, but I like him as an owner because he's a very passionate owner. And I think if you're a fan, that's what you're looking for. You want a guy that wants to win as badly as you do and doesn't look at it as some sort of business or a family heirloom or, you know, something. You know, he bought the Cowboys because he wanted to win championships. And, you know, it's a good value. But he wanted to win. He wanted to win with Dallas. He wanted to have the Cowboys victorious. He wanted to win Super Bowl. If you're a Cowboys fan, you want your owner to do that and do everything it possibly could to do that. But I used to say, boy, he used to make so many bad decisions. Remember he almost drafted Johnny Manziel? Remember we used to joke about how his son like probably tackled him before he got to the podium with the Johnny Manziel pick, right? But I don't know if you can say that about Jerry Jones now. I don't think you can make that claim. I think you can make the claim that Jones has done a pretty good job of drafting and picking players and making these kind of deals. Maybe some don't work out because not everybody can hit a home run every time they come to the plate, but he seems to have more success than misses lately. And I'm wondering if we can shake that terrible executive label from Jerry Jones that he had for a while. Cause it's just out of curiosity. Because, I mean, listen, I'm a Jerry Jones fan. I'm not a fan of the Cowboys, but I'm a Jerry Jones fan. I like owners who are passionate about their product and want to deliver a product that is good. Even they don't do things on the cheap, that they don't say like more, this is a business first before anything else. And there's some owners who are like that. There's some owners that are so far in the distance that really they just want the team to have the team and makes a little money for them. Great. And you know, whatever, let some smart people deal with it. But Jones is hands-on. A lot of it is because of ego, but a lot of it is because it's his. That's what he owns it. That's his team. And again, he has a vision of how he thinks the team is going to win. He doesn't do things because he thinks they're going to lose or be, you know, to prove a point. He does things like he brings in Greg Hardy because he thinks that makes the Cowboys better, even if Hardy carries really bad baggage, right? Or anybody else along the line with the drug suspensions or anything that has been problematic for him. Jones seems to be the kind of owner that goes, well, I'm doing it for the right reasons, which is I really do believe this is successful. Now we get to criticize those reasons to say, well, you don't see the picture like we see the picture. You don't see that player like we see the player. And that's a legit criticism. Right. But he's not an owner that's just sitting back and just going, whatever. I have smart people that deal with this. I just write the checks and I just collect the money and I go to the meetings and I talk to the other owners and I don't really know. Right. No, he's active. And if the hard part of this belief in wanting an owner like this is the results have to come, and the Cowboys haven't won a championship since 1996. So all of these past 20 plus years that they have been without a championship, you can be rah, rah, rah. I love my team. I love my fan base. I want to give them the best product. But eventually that fan base is going to have to say, while we appreciate your love for the product, like we love for the product, you got to win a championship. You've got to put another championship on the board. 22, 23 years, that's a long period of time for an organization like the Cowboys to not even be in contention for a title, right? And, but nevertheless, I think we can start shaking that from Jerry Jones a bit. It's not easy to do because he's had made some blunders, but you know, Van Der Esch has been was a good draft pick. You know, remember Sean Lee? He had Sean Lee and he went and got a younger linebacker, right? He's built a very strong offensive line. And remember Lyle Collins? Remember Lyle Collins was a kid out of LSU, and he was highly projected to be a pick, right? Highly projected to be a draft pick. But he had that issue where his girlfriend was murdered and he was being investigated for that at the time of the draft. Remember that story, how creepy that was? And teams were staying away because they didn't really know what they were getting involved in. Just the idea of somebody being investigated for a murder was scaring them off.
He was like predicted to be number one overall, right?
Yeah, he was a at least in the first round. Yeah, he had first round talent.
And it just kept top 10 talent.
Right, because the word got out that the police were actively looking at him as a suspect in this murder. And so then he clears the investigation. Now there's no reason to not take him, right? He's a legitimate, talented football player that has no baggage now. The police cleared him in the investigation. He wasn't around her at the time. He wasn't near her at the time. And he cleared him. And Jerry Jones goes, yeah, give him to the Cowboys. Get over here. Get over here, good offensive right tackle. Come over here and play. And that worked out great. So Jerry's made some good moves. Now, granted, I'm not going to blanket some of the bad moves he's made, but I wonder if we can shake off the label a bit. I mean, I wonder if he's shaking it off a touch. So we'll have that coming up for you in a little bit. 800-777-2907 is the telephone number as we continue to look at the playoffs. But coming up, it's a special anniversary for you TV folks out there. 20 years ago, this television show debuted, and we'll tell you what it is next on SB Nation AM.
This is SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios alongside Ron Culver. Here's Tony D.
What a perfect song to bring into this segment as we honor one of the greatest television shows of all time. This is Don't Stop Believin' by Journey. And if you have watched this television show, you are very familiar with this song.
Well, why it's important.
Why it's very important. On this date, January 10th, 1999, HBO debuted The Sopranos. The Sopranos aired for, I know, it's crazy, 20 years ago, The Sopranos came in the air.
I'm impressed that it debuted this day in 1999. I'm in awe right now that was 20 years ago.
20 years ago. And this show, I mean, it still holds up. They're running a marathon on it now. I can't stop watching it.
You and I were talking over the break. Certain things don't hold up, though.
No. Certain things don't hold up. They've got flip phones and whatnot.
Just think about it. You know, if this show was made today, the mob, they have to have flip phones. They can't use iPhones.
They can't use iPhones.
They got to have flip phones. I think that needs to be a staple from here on out.
The writing in this show is so good. There's one scene where Tony gets a car, and the guy asks him how much he loves the car, and his first reaction is, "I love it once I took that global positioning system out of it."
And you like realize, yeah, that's how you have to think as a mob boss. That the first thing you get when you get a fancy car is taking the global satellite positioning out of the car.
Can't be seen. Can't be found.
It ran six seasons, but it's mostly like seven because this season six was divided into there was 21 episodes. It was 12 and then nine. And it closed out in June of 2007. And the Journey song was the one that closed out the season where the man in the members only jacket was in the diner. Meadows parking the car. She gets into the diner and the screen goes black. And that's the song that was being played at the time on the jukebox at the diner with the really good onion rings, best in the state. So The Sopranos debuted in 1999 on this date. What a show. What an amazing show.
When you look back on it, okay, HBO's been doing it right.
Oh, yeah, they really absolutely have been
coming
out
with these hit shows, one right. It always seems like one right after the other. I mean, would this be their best?
I think so. And a lot of people would argue The Wire. I loved The Wire, but I don't find The Wire as rewatchable as I find The Sopranos.
Exactly.
And that may not mean that it's better or worse. You can throw on any episode of The Sopranos and I'll watch it. Sometimes I'll see a Wire episode and I'll go, I didn't like that season. I didn't like when they focused on the newspaper. I didn't like it when they focused on the docs and the Greek. But The Sopranos, I'll watch any season, any episode, anytime.
And to me, it's also one of those where if you jumped on HBO and you came into it midway through, you're almost inclined to like, no, I need to see this from the beginning. Let me find a way to watch it from the beginning, just because there are certain parts you need to see. You need to rewatch the whole thing. I mean, I was asking the question because I mean, the big hoopla for this year for HBO is Game of Thrones ending. Where does Game of Thrones rival against The Sopranos?
Yeah, Game of Thrones is really good. I've always told
I still have not seen. So
yeah, and I've always advised people to watch Game of Thrones the first season and then rewatch the first season. Because then some of the characters and some of the conversations make sense.
Yeah, forcing me to watch nine seasons of Game of Thrones. Thanks,
right,
Tony.
Exactly. And then from season two, you can watch it all out. But Game of Thrones gets confusing, and the first time you watch it, like, who's who? Who's that? This is pretty straightforward. I mean, it's a mob boss who's fighting for power in North New Jersey, and he's a family man, and then he finally gets that power and all the things that occur after that. And it's a pretty straightforward show. The acting of James Gandolfini, because you've ever seen James Gandolfini in interviews, he's so different than the Tony Soprano character, right? And he had to develop this like New Jersey accent, which he didn't have in the beginning of the episode. Like if you watch season one, he didn't have it. He had a more rather effeminate style of speaking.
Yeah, and then he had to develop it over time.
Yeah, you develop it over time. But the woman that I've always loved on the show was Dre DiMattea, who played Adriana, the Christopher's girlfriend, because she really nailed it. I mean, she really nailed the New Jersey mob girlfriend. And that was brilliant. But Lorraine Bracco, who played Karen in Goodfellas, was the psychiatrist. And this had a lot. Frankie Valli was in this as Rusty, the lawyer. He played a character in the show, Frankie Valli. And they referenced Frankie Valli in the show a number of times, and yet he was on it. Lawrence Taylor had a brief cameo in it. Eric Mangini had a brief cameo on this show. Frank Sinatra Jr. was at a poker game on this show. I mean, they had a lot of like stars that came in at a brief period of time.
Was it the bass player for the E Street Band?
Oh, yeah, exactly. Yeah.
He's a recurring character.
Yep. Steven Van Zandt was recurring character. He played he played his concierge in the, as they were building, the empire, the Soprano family empire. But it was, man, what a show. And again, it carries over well. And it's got some really, really dark moments. There were some disturbing scenes in that in The Sopranos. There were some scenes that, like, I know that are coming because I've watched the shows many, many times, and they're still hard to take, even though I know they're coming. I mean, there's some brutal.
No, there's some that
sad murders and whatnot.
Some that you're just like, man, I can't believe they did that.
Yeah,
it seems to me like as a show progressed, and obviously it has to. As it progresses on, but it seemed like as it progressed on, it was more and more of like, oh my God, they went there.
One of my favorite episodes is, it's kind of almost a standalone episode, is when Christopher and his crew, they go to LA and they're trying to get Ben Kingsley to be in their movie. And Ben Kingsley is playing himself and he's being intimidated by mobsters. And it's just so cool. And Lauren Bacall is in it, and she's carrying like this gift bag from an awards show, and they rob her and they punch her in the face, and she falls to the ground as they rob her. And I'm thinking how cool it must have been for these actors to play themselves, kind of a little bit of a parody of themselves. Like Ben Kingsley is like legitimately scared of these mob people that are trying to get him to be in this movie. And Lauren Bacall swears and curses as she's being knocked down and robbed of her gift basket from an awards episode. Like, it's pretty awesome. I mean, it's kind of great. But a lot of praise for some of the best acting on the show. James Gandolfini and Edie Falco would have when they would fight. When they would have these, some of this is real. It felt as real as you would see.
I mean, you felt like when
you're watching married couples fighting.
Yeah, you felt like I thought they were together.
Yeah, I mean, their arguments were, I mean, legit. They're like married arguments.
I'm wondering if their significant others or spouses were ever jealous.
Like, yeah, no kidding, so right?
Like, he doesn't fight with me like
that.
Yeah,
he's not as passionate about this as I. You know, he's just whatever you want to do. And then when those two hit the screen and they would have arguments over their children or money or anything, it was like watching a real life married couple fight about this stuff.
It brought you flashbacks, right? Because everyone saw their parents fight at least once in their life, and it brings you flashbacks like, oh god,
yeah, exactly.
Dad,
exactly.
Don't say that to mama.
And it was what a show. And they, you know, they had different storylines, you know, Vito's storyline in New Hampshire and things like that, and Christopher's drug addiction and the intervention. But a lot of it was just, you know, really good television, really, really good television. And I think, and this is just me speaking, I think it elevated people's expectation of television that did translate into shows like Breaking Bad and Walking Dead and shows
definitely,
like that.
Definitely.
I think people wanted a little more from their dramas because, you know, this is HBO and this is separate, but you know how like you can see a TV show, you can instantly tell that it's a network show or not. There's just a look and a style of writing that is just generic network TV. And then you can see the dirtier, grittier Sons of Anarchy, Breaking Bad, that you know is like a little bit more cable, more AMC.
What it felt like, I mean, and this, you know, I'm glad you brought this up, because what it feels like when The Sopranos came out, it had more of a movie theater quality to
exactly.
the TV show.
Exactly, right.
You know, it was, I mean, basically what it really is like seven episodes or seven seasons of a long movie.
Yeah,
it has exactly. Maybe more like that TV movie feel, like, you know, our parents watched back in the day, like with Roots or God, I can't even remember any other TV movies, but Roots just sticks out of my mind. That's kind of how it felt like, and you started to see this transition, like you said, you know, bringing up Sons of Anarchy. Before that, HBO, I mean, they had Sex and the City. That didn't really feel like, that felt like a almost could be a sitcom.
Yeah.
It didn't have that gritty feel like, oh, this is appointment watching, sit down on the couch, grab a bowl of popcorn, we're watching The Sopranos now.
Yeah, Alan Sepinwall, who's wrote a book about The Sopranos. He was a New Jersey newspaper TV critic, and so he wrote about this show the moment it came out and basically, you know, chronologically put together this great Sopranos sort of trilogy, you know, not trilogy, but documentary kind of thing. But he's always said that it raised the bar of writing, right? Like, now writers really had to write television. They had to write really good television. And some of the better writers in screenwriting were going to work in television. And I think this kicked off that because it was so well written. You have to pay attention to the dialogue. It's one of those shows where you can miss really, really good dialogue, really good ribs and interesting the way a character would say a line, it meant something because he was trying to hide a secret or whatever. It was that good, and it lent itself to other really good television. And this show was all about that. It was almost perfectly done from the standpoint of the balancing act between a mob boss and his family, right? It was almost like if this could be a real situation, a real story about a guy yelling at his kids because they don't get good grades and then ordering the hit of a guy that got out of hand at the same time. I mean, it was a crazy show like that.
And it shows the struggles that all fathers have.
All fathers have, right?
You know, balancing work and their home life.
Yeah. There's that one scene.
I go through the same things every day.
There's one scene in the show where they go home and they think the heat is coming, and Tony goes up and he starts bringing out money and he starts handing it to his wife, and this piles of money, and they starts breaking out guns and rifles. And she's just taking them all. And then he reminds her, you got to give me the jewelry. Yeah, they're gonna, we don't have receipts for those. It's so good. 20 years ago today.
20 years.
20 years ago today, HBO debuted The Sopranos. Now, what a show. All right, coming up, we'll talk about the Dallas Cowboys from 3-5 to on the cusp of the NFC Championship game. Yes, they've got to face the Rams. Bobby Belt joins us, Cowboys sideline reporter for SB Nation Radio. He will come up next to talk everything Cowboys and how they look against the Rams coming up this weekend on SB Nation Radio.
You're listening to SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios alongside Ron Culver. Here's Tony D.
No, that wasn't Ice Ice Baby. We're honoring the songs of 1982 in honor of the anniversary of The Catch. So this is Under Pressure by Queen. Bobby Belt joins us, Cowboys sideline reporter for SB Nation Radio. Going to help us with the Cowboys, who went 3-5 to begin the season, now facing the Rams in the divisional matchup. How are you, Bobby?
I'm great, but that's Under Pressure by Queen and David Bowie.
Oh, David Bowie, that's right. I got to throw in David Bowie, too.
Let's not forget David Bowie there.
That's right. That's right. All right, so the Cowboys, as I said earlier, start 3-5. When you were there with them at that moment, was this a good team that was struggling, or did you say, oh, this is another lost season?
It's funny, I remember I was at that game, and when it ended at 3-5, everybody was like, okay, so a loss next week and the division's done, right? And we can start firing these coaches and, you know, we don't have to worry about this. I actually remember being down in Houston in November and talking to a friend who works for the University of Houston Cougars football team, and we were talking about the Cowboys, and we were like, that Cooper trade doesn't make a lot of sense. This is a 5-win team. So, no, I think they surprised everybody with the turnaround. I mean, I think everybody knows they have talent, but a lot of people felt like this talent wasn't going to flourish under this current coaching staff and not until they were able to mature a little bit. I mean, they are an incredibly young team. They, for the first time this season in week 3, I believe it was, when Sean Lee missed a start, they didn't have a single starter on offense or defense who was over the age of 29. And they've never had that happen in a single game in the history of the franchise before this year. And they've played something like 10 games like that this year, including the playoff game last week. So they're incredibly young. It's a coaching staff that I think a lot of people don't have much faith in or didn't have much faith in. And so, no, I don't think anybody really saw the turnaround coming. But it's been encouraging to see. And I think with the growth of Dak Prescott and bringing in Amari Cooper and seeing Ezekiel Elliott shoulder a large load and also having the defense performing like it is, I think that's, you know, the main reason you've seen this crazy turnaround.
So what has Amari Cooper brought? I mean, if he can help the run game by getting some separation, all the things you would want a good wide receiver to do, has he done that? What's the immediate impact of having Amari Cooper there?
Well, I mean, Ezekiel Elliott was having a great season before Amari Cooper got here, and it wasn't moving the needle for them. So I don't even know that it's so much that Amari Cooper coming in has softened things for the run game as much as it is. It's just, it's given him a guy, it's given Dak Prescott a guy that can just beat, you know, one-on-one, can make catches when he's got, you know, a corner in front of him and a safety over the top. He's just, you know, really adept at route running and is able to get open, and it's just a reliable option for Dak Prescott. And you've seen how frequently he's gone that direction. We had the game against the Redskins on Thanksgiving where he had, you know, 180 yards and a couple touchdowns, and then the game against the Eagles where he had 3 touchdowns and 200 yards or whatever. And then even last week it was one of the quietest 100-yard receiving performances I had seen, but he, you know, picked up another 100 yards last week. So it's just been helpful for Dak Prescott to have a guy who can reliably get open as opposed to having the Dez Bryant-style receiver where it's like, you know, throw me the ball when I'm not open, I'll still make the play. That was Dez Bryant's specialty, was contested catches, and that's not really a Dak-friendly receiver, and we heard that buzzword from the Cowboys a lot this offseason. They wanted a Dak-friendly offense, and I think Amari Cooper fits that to a T.
Let's go to this game against the Rams, and Ezekiel Elliott led the league in rushing going up against a Rams defense. It's not very good against the run, but this is the playoffs, and things get tightened up. But how much of a factor is that, what I just said, going into this game?
Oh, I think you're going to see a lot of Ezekiel Elliott on Sunday or Saturday. I think that, you know, the Cowboys did their best to kind of lighten his workload and not play him at all near the end of the year. They were trying to get him rest, not nearly as much rest as the Rams were able to get for Todd Gurley. But, you know, this is a guy who regularly will touch the ball over 30 times in a game throughout his career when he's been with the Cowboys. And so I think they wanted to prep him a little bit for what they were hoping was going to be a deep playoff run. And, yeah, I think with, you know, the Rams' high-powered offense, I think they're going to try and play ball control and slow things down a little bit and try and prevent them from touching the ball, play a little bit of stick-in-the-mud offense. And with the Rams' struggles against the run, they are last in the NFL in yards per carry allowed at 5.1. So, yeah, I think you're going to see a really heavy dose of Ezekiel Elliott on Saturday night, and I think that'll be their main mode of attack to try and limit this Rams offense as much as they can just by holding on to the ball for as long as they can.
Give me a description on the flip side of it. Give me a description of the Cowboys defense. We saw it against the Saints and how good it is. What is it? What is its defining characteristic?
They're really fast. I mean, that's just basically the biggest thing for them. They're a really fast defense. They communicate really well. It's not often you're going to see them out of position. You're not going to see miscommunication or busted coverages. It's really not their thing. They're always really good about their pre-snap and post-snap communication. They fly to the ball carrier whenever that happens. They don't miss a lot of tackles. And I think really, you know, the strength has been that defensive line recently. DeMarcus Lawrence and Randy Gregory getting a lot of pressure. Antoine Woods and Malik Collins have quietly been great on the interior for the Cowboys, especially Antoine Woods, their one technique that they picked up from the Titans this offseason. That's a guy who's just been eating up blockers and you know, been able to make tackles when it counts. And so I think that Antoine Woods, Malik Collins, DeMarcus Lawrence, Tyrone Crawford, Randy Gregory, these are guys that have been big impact players for them. And of course, they've had the emergence of Byron Jones, moving from safety to corner and really kind of being out on that island against the opposing team's top receiver and taking that away. So that's been huge for them. The entire defense has stepped up all year, but I think the biggest thing is just their speed is really tough to hang with. They fly to the ball. They're able to keep up with just about anybody, and you don't normally catch them in, you know, logistical errors or logistical mistakes. They're always communicating with each other, always staying up to speed and you know, knowing their assignments.
Bobby Bell joins us, Cowboys sideline reporter, as we gear up for Dallas and Los Angeles coming up on Saturday in the NFC divisional round. Bobby, give me an idea about Jerry Jones, because a lot of these moves that the Cowboys make, it's Jerry Jones did this, Jerry Jones did that. How much does he confer with others? How much of it is on him alone? These big decisions that the Cowboys have made, what percentage of it is solely Jerry Jones?
I don't know that he's GM so much anymore as much as he is just CEO. You know, he rubber stamps and signs off on things, but he's delegated a lot to, you know, the rest of his staff. Stephen Jones, his son, who's the COO, Will McClay, the director of player personnel, Jason Garrett, guys like that, guys under his staff, he really trusts to go out there and make those moves. And then when they suggest something, if he doesn't want to do it, he won't do it. But, I mean, they definitely need to get his sign off on anything they do before they go and do it. But he's not actively out there, you know, picking out these personnel moves anymore. He's not the one kind of leading the charge in what they're doing. It's more just an official sign off that they need to get. Now, that's not to say he does not have input in group discussions or doesn't have a strong opinion that he once heard within it. But I mean, they really kind of allow their brain trust to make a call, make a decision, and then Jerry ultimately decides if he's going to sign off on it or not.
What did you see in Dak Prescott this year? I mean, he came in with a bang and then kind of fluttered out a little bit, but then he kind of comes back in this season. But what is different about this season? What is he maturing on?
Oh, that's tough, because I think a lot of people still to this day, even with his improved statistical performance in the second half and things like that, a lot of people are still really critical of, you know, how it's done. They want to style point it a little bit. I've always been a big believer in Dak Prescott before they even put him out there on the field after they drafted him. I was really excited when they, you know, rolled with him that first season, the second season. I think he's gotten a lot of unfair criticism during this time. But, you know, I think what you're seeing most of all with him, and the thing that everybody always points to with him, is he's just a warrior. I mean, the guy's going to battle with him. He is an absolute gamer. I mean, for the most defining characteristic that everybody's been talking about this week with him is just how clutch he is. You know, he's so clutch. He steps up in big moments. I mean, you look at, in his career, in the fourth quarter or overtime, when the game is tied, his passer rating is 150.5,
wow,
which is dang near perfect. 8 touchdowns, no interceptions, something like 12 yards per attempt. And, I mean, it's on about 70 pass attempts. So it's not a completely small sample size. He's just been almost perfect in tie games in the fourth quarter and overtime for his whole career. He has, you know, out of his 33 career victories, 15 of them he's had a game-winning drive, which is a drive that puts you ahead for good in the fourth quarter or overtime. So, I mean, he's been a really big crunch-time performer, but I think what you're seeing most of all with him is he's starting to feel more comfortable in the pocket. That was a really tough thing for people early in the season, that it just looked like he was making the wrong decisions, when to step up in the pocket versus when to break it, you know, which side to shift to in the pocket. Just looked uneasy, looked uncomfortable. I think in the last month or so, you're really starting to see him have better presence in the pocket and be able to stand back there and weather some of the bullets, you know, flying at him while he's standing back there, and have a little bit more resolve to just stand in there, take the hit, and make the throw.
How healthy is the team? I know Tavon Austin and Cole Beasley were banged up a little bit. How healthy are they going into this game?
They're pretty healthy, actually. It's one of the healthier times they've had this year. They were healthiest headed into the wild card game, but yeah, of course, they lost Allen Hurns to the injury. They had Jeff Heath, who got a little bit of a wrist thing during the game, and Cole Beasley hobbling around on ankle. Cole Beasley has not practiced this week. Tight end Blake Jarwin, who broke out at the end of the year, he has not practiced this week. I still think Cole's probably going to go, try and give it a go. It's a little unclear about Jarwin at this point. Xavier Suofilo, who had taken over the left guard spot midway through the season, he had been injured. He's fairly healthy now, or at least healthy enough to be practicing, and he's practicing with the second team. And it's rookie Connor Williams out of Texas back at left guard this week. So it'll be interesting to see if they're going to stick with Connor Williams for this game, particularly because the questions about Connor Williams isn't related to play strength, and you're going up against, you know, Ndamukong Suh and Aaron Donald on the interior for the Rams there, and that's, you know, where you'd like to potentially see a little bit more bulk on your guards. I'll be interested to see who rolls there. But, yeah, pretty much healthy. The biggest concerns right now, of course, Cole Beasley, Blake Jarwin, and then you've got the the eternal question of defensive tackle David Irving. But, yeah. I mean, there's no chance David Irving plays this weekend.
Bobby, I do want to ask you, the big boat, the big yacht Jerry Jones bought, are we going to see this on Coastal Cities? What is this? This is great.
Man, I'd love that. I'm going to try and get a ride on that thing.
Absolutely, you should.
He's got a helicopter that he takes to the Cowboys games. He actually literally takes off from the Star in a helicopter and lands it at the stadium so that he can avoid traffic. And he's got his private jet, and you know, I'm sure he's got plenty of luxurious cars and things like that. So he probably just felt like he needed that for, you know, everything to be complete. So he could have, you know, the helicopter, the yacht. So I think that was the main reason for getting the yacht, was just to kind of complete the collection.
I hope he takes it on Cities. I hope we get some camera shots of the new Jerry Jones yacht. Bobby, good stuff as always, my friend. Enjoy the game this weekend. Always good talking to you.
Absolutely. Thanks, guys.
You got it. Bobby Belt, Cowboys sideline reporter on SB Nation Radio, talking about the Cowboys and the Rams, who I think have a really good shot at winning this game in Los Angeles. I know the Rams are good and strong and good offense and put up good numbers, but I think Ezekiel Elliott is going to be the big key against Rams defense that's given up over 5 yards per rush. 800-777-2907 is the number. You want to get your thoughts in on that game and other games in the NFL. Hit us up on Twitter at Tony D Radio. Also at Ron Culver, Ron with two N's, SB Nation AM.
This is SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
And the final song of the 1982 tribute, Pac-Man Fever. I don't know who sang this. I have no idea who sang this.
I have no idea either. I had it written down. I lost that paper.
Oh, Pat
guarantee I'd never heard of them before, and I don't think they did anything
probably
since.
Probably ever heard since. Pac-Man Fever.
But this is one song when I was looking over this. I mean, obviously, you know a lot of those songs, but this one I vividly remember listening to when I was a youngster in 1982.
Yeah, I do, yeah. You know what's funny is every time my son and I go to a movie theater or a mall or something, and there's a Ms. Pac-Man machine,
yep.
I always play it. And as good as my son is at video games, he's always impressed with my ability to you know, play Ms. Pac-Man
to handle that
high
joystick.
Speed. Handle that joystick, you know. Get moving. Yeah.
That's why, even though I got a bad rap, I really enjoy Pixar. Or not, Pixels.
Yeah, absolutely.
The Adam
yeah,
Sandler movie.
Yeah. That was very nostalgic.
Yeah, it was.
It was nostalgic, yeah. Remember sticking your quarters at, like, you had the next game, you would stick the quarter
on the screen.
Yeah, stick them on the screen.
Line them up.
Oh, my God. I remember the local arcade would give out free tokens for, like, grades. Like, if you got A's and B's on your report card,
yep.
You get free tokens. And so you'd go, we'd go after every report card, we'd get some tokens. And, man, it was like, I remember the lines for games. I mean, like, you had to wait in line to get, like, Spy Hunter or Dragon Lair, anything that new was coming out. You had to wait in line to play it.
I think that's what one of the appeals to Wreck-It Ralph is, because there's one scene in Wreck-It Ralph when the girl was trying to get on this game, and they lined up their quarters, like, oh, it's going to be a while, and they're drinking their Slurpee.
Right.
And she has nothing else to play, so she goes over and plays Fix-It Felix.
Yeah, that's
it's
right.
It's like, oh,
that's
well,
right.
And then that's why she finds out that, you know, Fix-It Felix, the game is broken. You know, that's how arcade life was. It's like, if you weren't there in time to get to your game, you know, I think one game that I know that was popular for a time period was Rampage.
Rampage,
could
yeah.
not get on that game.
No, not at all. There was an arcade in New Jersey where we lived that was, you paid by the time, and all the games didn't require any quarters, right? You just went up and pressed the button and started the games.
Nice.
So it was great. So you go in and you had a check-in card and you check it out, and then you paid by the... So we took our kids, and my son was like, this is what you did? I said, son, this was the greatest thing in the history of mankind.
Wasted hours and hours.
I could
kill an entire Saturday in the arcade and come outside. It's like, oh, it's dark.
Yeah. Burger time. Like walking across the burger
Paper
and dropping
boy.
To another level. Oh, yeah. All of that good stuff. SB Nation Radio. It's SB Nation AM.